Hello, K-12 online conference goers. Welcome to Web 2.0, Share the Adventure with Students. My name is Sylvia Martinez, and I'm happy to have you join me today. I'd like to introduce you to someone I'm very fond of. Jane. Jane is a great teacher. She loves her school, her dog, and her kids. Jane keeps up with trends. Sometimes she gets carried away. Jane knows about Web 2.0. I can connect my kids to the world, she thinks. But where do I start? What is all this? Jane wonders if she'll ever figure it all out in time, and who is there to help her? Her kids are there. They can figure things out. They can make the case for technology to others. They can help create lessons, set up technology and software, and teach other students. They are the net generation. They want to help. They can help. They want their education to look like the socially connected experiences many of them are having outside of school. They don't want to power down when they walk into the classroom. Jane recruited her students as allies as she figured out Classroom 2.0. The bottom line is, Jane does not have to go it alone. Except on costume day. Jane is one of those teachers every kid remembers because she's excited about her own learning and her own experiences. It's her passion for going all the way for her students that makes her a great teacher, and that same passion can help her create technology-rich experiences in her classroom. She may be someone who's tried in the past to incorporate technology, but the barriers were too high, or for reasons beyond her control, it just didn't seem worth it. So now you've met Jane. Actually, we all know Jane. Probably many of you are Jane, even the guys. We are all here because we are excited about the potential of new Web 2.0 tools and wonder what it takes to get from here to there. What I want to do today is to not focus on the obstacles that the Janes of the world already know all too well. I'd like to focus on the opportunities that arise when we include students as partners in improving education. So now, meet Sylvia. I'm Sylvia Martinez from Generation Yes, which stands for a generation of youth and educators succeeding. We work with schools around the world who want to adopt models of technology integration that include students as allies, teachers, and mentors in their own schools. If you'd like to find out more about me or Generation Yes, there are links on the wiki that goes with this presentation on the K-12 online conference website. In schools around the world, teachers often have students helping out. It's a natural thing to do, to have student helpers in the classroom, or even to establish a student tech team. Today I'm going to talk about how this natural tendency can be turned from an ad hoc, catch-as-catch-can solution to something that can be counted on longer term. Along the way, we'll talk about how that benefits both teachers and students, and why it's especially appropriate for encouraging technology use in the classroom. I'm planning to talk for about 30 minutes with lots of links that you can explore further on the wiki. I also hope to follow your lead about continuing the conversation after the session is over. I'm easy to find, my email and blog are on the wiki too, and I welcome you to contact me about anything you want to talk about. Here's what I'm not going to talk about today. Number one, specific how-tos about any one tool. There are lots of great presentations at this conference and lots of guidance on the internet about using Web 2.0 in the classroom. Number two, I'm not going to be talking about other ways that teachers can get help with technology. I want to be perfectly clear. I'm not saying that students are the only way that teachers can figure out new tools, or that kids are smarter than adults, or that teachers shouldn't get training, find mentors, and be the lead learner in their own quest to use Web 2.0 tools in their classroom. In fact, there are many wonderful sessions online here that talk about all these other ways for teachers to learn how to use new tools. This session topic is hopefully just one more tool in your tool belt. So, what's all this about Web 2.0? As you've no doubt heard in other sessions, Web 2.0 is a term that has a technical definition, but really doesn't mean anything specific to education. It's just a term that implies that the new way to work with the web is different than the first wave of web pages, or Web 1.0. Web 2.0 has also come to mean a new ease of communication that can bring you personalized news information, but also create connections with people, sharing everything from photos to knitting patterns. Many teachers are rediscovering their own passion for learning through these tools, which allow you to reach beyond time and space to learn, connect, and collaborate. It's not hard to look at these tools and envision the act of learning itself transformed. And it's only natural to want to figure out how to bring this to your classroom. So the tools I'm going to talk about may not all be Web 2.0 by precise definition, but what I'm talking about includes any kind of technology that enhances classroom collaboration and students doing things. Students are especially useful allies when you are implementing tools that you want students to use and be in control of. Tools that enable the kinds of learning experiences that are student-centered and active. Finding, testing, and implementing these tools tends to follow a similar path and encounter similar obstacles. Teachers looking to use them in the classroom may find these obstacles to be interesting challenges or impossible roadblocks. By looking at these obstacles as a shared learning opportunity for you and your students, it might allow you to keep your sanity and achieve your goals of integrating Web 2.0 and other technology in your classroom. And along the way, your students will get a rewarding dose of real-life problem solving. So let's get straight to the good part. Teachers who get excited about technology and Web 2.0 tools typically start to think about using them in the classroom. Can I get my classes blogging? Should I have them create a wiki instead of doing a group project I did last year? Can my class use Google Earth to track migration patterns? Can I have my students do podcasts? Even a simple plan will immediately start to get complicated. You may find that you have issues with district or school policy, clashes with IT about what is safe to use, conflicting answers about which tool is the best or the easiest, hardware that just won't cooperate, or confusion about how to get started. With all the demands on teachers' time, it's easy to get sidetracked by any one of these issues. All of them take time and energy to sort out and solve. If it's too much work, you'll get overwhelmed and the year will slip by with nothing happening. And that's the worst thing that can happen. Nothing. People think the worst thing is some sort of catastrophic failure where the technology breaks and the students look at you blankly while you fumble around in front of them. But really, the worst scenario is that absolutely nothing happens, nothing changes. You can fix mistakes, you can try a second time, but if you end up being paralyzed by the choices into doing nothing, it surely is a failure. The number one thing to start with is your educational goal. You, as the teacher, are leading your students on a mission that has nothing to do with technology. It's an educational mission, first and foremost. No matter how you plan it, whether you use a process like understanding by design or something else, start with the educational goal. Once you have your goal, you can start to think about the technology part. So here are some examples of what students can do at various grade levels and with various time limits. Older students can research solutions and present options with pros and cons. The research can be a small group activity, and the presenting can be part of the assignment. Consensus-building activities create opportunities for students to analyze and debate, while actual implementation can teach project planning and collaboration. Remember, this does not have to be weeks of work. Many of these tools are very simple and can be found with a simple Google search and implemented in a few days. Younger students can test hardware, scrounge up old microphones, tape recorders, and cables, and see if they work. They can label them, sort them into bins, and become the keepers of the equipment as it is used. All-age students can go on a school scavenger hunt. Every school has the closet. Make sure the kids aren't breaking and entering, but asking the right people about unused equipment. Do you have handhelds tucked into desk drawers? Cameras that aren't being used? Students can go around the school and ask teachers what they have that they aren't using anymore. The more they find, the more they can test. Remember that many student uses do not need the most up-to-date equipment. audio recording devices, and cameras that may seem obsolete will work just fine for web pages or podcasts. Figure out what the students have already. How many students have cameras on their cell phones? Students can try out applications and report on results. Students can maintain lists of add-ons, plugins, and new options for old tools. A really important thing to involve the students in is debating how these tools can be used within the boundaries of school or district policy and technology use plans. There's no better way for students to really understand school policy than to work with the policy in real-life situations. For example, instead of banning cell phones, why not use them to record interviews? Or use the cameras to document science projects or field trips? Let students help figure out the nuts and bolts. How do you transfer the files? Where? Do you need a Flickr account? Is that blocked? What other options are there? Have you heard about GCast? GCast, by the way, is a way to create a podcast from your phone. You can sign up, make a toll-free call, and what you say is turned into a podcast on their site. They host it for free. So if your goal is to have students document a field trip with audio and video, one of them might find a tool like GCast and change your entire plan about how to do it. Suddenly, the problem of not being able to upload files to the network server is solved. There's a real reason for kids to use cell phones, and you don't have to learn how to create a podcast. Something you might not have known about, or something that didn't even exist yesterday, could be the answer to what you are looking for. You can sign up and try out GCast immediately, and if it doesn't work out, try something else. Let's talk about the student side of the coin for a minute. This isn't just about you getting help to do your job. What do the students get out of helping investigate technology, and why is this important? Well, first and foremost, authentic problems inspire creative thinking and empower students to exceed expectations. These are true 21st century skills. Figuring out how to use these tools has no right or wrong answer, just like real life. Your students will be more forgiving of the inevitable technical glitches if they understand the trade-offs that were made in choosing the tools. Also, your students will be able to share new understanding of educational uses of Web 2.0 tools with their peers and maybe even other teachers. In choosing and setting up these tools, you and your students will have to wrestle with the real issues of security, privacy, and policy. Instead of resenting and ignoring rules handed down from on high, students can see the basis for these rules. They may be a lot more restrictive than you expect, or they may decide to protest and lobby for change in district policies they don't agree with. But either way, since you are on their team, you can direct their energy in positive ways. By giving agency to the students, you are encouraging them to think for themselves and take responsibility for their own actions. And really, it's fun. If you aren't a person who thinks this is fun, you just have to believe me. It's exhilarating and thrilling to solve a problem and make something work. Some of your students will think this is way more exciting than the actual assignments you end up giving, but at least they will be invested in using the tools. Okay. So maybe you have some ideas, but you're wondering where to start. What do I do on Monday? At this point, I want to talk about the whole path of including students in the process of incorporating technology into a classroom. But I don't want to make it sound like it's impossible or just another overwhelming thing that will never work out. The process is fluid. It could take a long time, or it could all be done in one afternoon. All of this is possible in baby steps. You can pick and choose where and when you want students to help. The educational mission is step one. This should always be in the teacher's hands. What is the educational goal you're trying to achieve? Like a mission statement, this should be at an overview level, not about a tool. The mission shouldn't be use a blog to blank. If you don't specify the educational mission, you won't have a clear guide for the upcoming decision-making process or justification for why you're spending valuable class time on this. This is especially crucial if you are trying something for the first time and need to get permission. But everyone is blogging isn't going to convince a superintendent to overrule the IT staff who has blocked all blogs for security reasons. But coming in with a plan to collaborate with students in Korea on global warming has a whole different weight to it. Analysis. Now you can look at tools. What do you have? What can you get? And will it meet your needs? It's best if you have some idea about what you want, since you will need to narrow it down for them to at least a class of tools. For example, if your project needs a place for online storage of photos, that is narrow enough for students to come up with some options for you. In the time that you've established for investigation, allow the students to go for it. This is like brainstorming. There are no wrong answers. Keep them moving forward and collect as much information, equipment, and answers as possible. If you have given your class the assignment to find an online presentation tool by Friday, Friday's a deadline. It means you don't need to feel guilty when you hear about another new tool next Monday. You are moving forward. Decision-making. Once you have some options, it's very effective to model the decision-making process for students through open discussion and consensus building. Pick a tool, make a plan, and stick to your decision, at least for now. Implementation. Just do it. Move quickly to trying these technologies out. If there are bits and pieces along the way that aren't perfect, you want to find out as quickly as possible. Testing. Even the best decisions aren't always the right ones in reality. There'll be roadblocks or problems that you didn't anticipate. Getting to the point of using the tools quickly means that if you have to go back to the drawing board, you haven't wasted a lot of time. Classroom use. Now you will find out if your plan really works. But even if there are glitches or things that need to be switched around, you have a group of students to help you. Plus, if they did a good job in the investigation phase, some ready-to-go Plan B technologies. Reflection. Since this is a learning activity, an important part of learning is reflection. It may be as simple as a class discussion about how the reality met the expectations of the students. Did they think the tools helped? Would they do things differently? Older students can benefit from your thinking out loud about your expectations, what you learned, and what you think they learned. Don't think about this process as a one-time thing. The world moves quickly. A decision made this semester may be completely different next semester. And yes, you may be doing this every semester. That's why it's important to move quickly. Done trumps perfect in this case. This is not a 5-year technology plan. This is guerrilla war. The good thing about many of these tools is that they're free and easy to use, and you can leave them behind if they don't work out. The important thing is that you and your students are learning the pros and cons of these new tools and will be better informed the next time. Of course, if you find something that's perfect for you, stick with it. Choosing and implementing new technology is not the only way to involve students. Even if these opportunities are not available, students can do a lot to improve the support for technology around the school. They will tend to evangelize its use and explain the benefits to classmates and even other teachers. By marshaling students as communicators, they can have a lot of influence on parents and the community at large. They can help with maintenance and support, provide expertise to others, or help enforce school policy from a student point of view. Students can also take the burden off the teacher by enforcing rules about conduct. If you're setting up a blog, who will monitor the comments? Can students do that? Doing so removes the teacher as the gatekeeper and focus of the conversation. What if a student posts something bad? What is bad? This type of discussion is well worth having with students. If you expect them to adhere to policy, they need to understand it. Teens are notoriously bad at transferring abstract rules to real life. Having to talk about it before it happens will make it slightly less abstract. Having to live with it and enforce it with their friends makes it real. When you give students the responsibility to make and enforce the rules, you may find out that they are even harsher than you would be. You may need to temper their enthusiasm for rulemaking. But if you are simply helping them enforce their own rules, you are on their team, not the bad guy. Your relationship with the technology staff at your site is crucial. You need to have some responsibility first. Then you can share this with your students. Don't ask students to help if it's going to be a complete debacle where their smallest decisions are immediately countermanded. Student trust is hard won, and they won't easily forgive you if you give them responsibility and then take it away. Blaming IT staff will further create an adversarial relationship and reinforce their perception of adults as people who don't get it. You may be able to negotiate partial victories for student input. If blogging is your goal, but the district has already chosen a blog tool, see if students can be responsible for maintaining widgets, themes, or add-ons. There are usually many skills that need to be learned in using any tool, and students can become experts in maintaining these tools for your classroom use. After a while, You should have some idea of who among your students can help you with technology. Even if the actual implementation has to be done by someone else, see if at least some of your students can be included. Their involvement will help you do any required maintenance as time goes on. The less reliance you have on outside help, the more versatile you can be with your class. And of course, use normal precautions. Students should not have passwords until they prove themselves trustworthy. Trust and responsibility are connected. You want your students to have as much responsibility as is possible, increasing it as they prove themselves trustworthy. A student cannot show responsibility if they are not given responsibility. They will also learn to trust you along the way. Mistakes will be made, probably on both sides. Be open about your plans, fears, and mistakes. One of the things we often hear about technology is that kids are digital natives and adults are digital immigrants. Adults will never get technology like the kids do. Their brains are actually wired differently. And as digital immigrants, we will always speak with an accent. We can't really see what they see. Although this metaphor is catchy, it creates a number of traps in its use. We don't want to pretend that a cute metaphor is a guiding principle for education. By calling students digital natives, it can become an excuse for not actually teaching them about technology. Even if we accept that many students are more facile and less intimidated by technology than many adults, it doesn't mean they know anything. If we miss our responsibility to teach them about appropriate academic uses of technology, it's our fault when silly, or worse, inappropriate uses of technology fill that vacuum. Digital natives they may be, but they still need teachers. By giving students insight into how decisions are made to use technology in education, we give them the excitement of discovery and empower them to think beyond themselves and their own enjoyment of the moment. And just like digital native is an easy label, digital immigrant creates the same problem in reverse by providing a convenient excuse for teachers who don't want to learn something new. I have all the sympathy in the world for teachers who are overburdened and who patiently listen to all the hype that never pans out. But it's 2007. The world is changing. No one is saying that fundamentals aren't important, that critical thinking and reading and math aren't required for today's world. But technology makes those things accessible to students who might have been left behind before. Blogs allow shy students to have a voice in a class discussion, or allow a student who is not even physically in the classroom to participate. Wikis represent the technology of democracy. It's everything we teach students about collaboration and teamwork. Getting these tools up and running is important, using them even more so. Creating labels like native and immigrant only solidify the past and create unnecessary boundaries. It's simply the wrong metaphor for a collaborative learning environment where teachers and students are all lifelong learners. When teachers look at technology tools, it's always a challenge to find the right tool for the job. The educational mission has to be up front, of course, but it's not always clear when you look at a tool whether they really meet the need. Sometimes it's simple. Audacity, for example, is a free tool that helps record and edit audio files. Sometimes a tool is just a tool, and if you need audio editing, Audacity is a great choice. There's little pedagogy inherent in the use of an audio editing tool. The pedagogy comes from your decisions about what the students are recording, how it fits into the lesson, and how you structure assessment. Other decisions are more complicated. Let's say you're thinking about some sort of collaborative writing assignment for a social studies class. You might immediately think of using blogs for the student work, or maybe a wiki. The choice of tool is going to definitely impact the work the students do, your ability to guide and assess their work, and the product the students produce. To make this decision, you have to analyze what the real educational purpose of your assignment is and match that to the tool capabilities. In this case, blogs versus wikis, blogs are more of a process tool that allows for a chronological group conversation about a common topic. Wikis are a place where a group collaborates on a single product. The process of getting there, although it's recorded in the history logs of the wiki, is less important than the final outcome. So before students can help you, you need to be clear about the pedagogical mission. The goal is to focus their attention on tools that meet your educational needs first. If a wiki is a more appropriate tool, there are still many decisions to be made about which one is right for you and how to keep it up and running. The students don't need to be involved in every decision to be helpful. You are still in charge. Having students teach other students, or even teachers, is another excellent way to maximize learning all around. Using technology to teach is a natural for students. If you've seen the affinity that students have for multimedia, you can use this as a teaching and learning tool. For example, here's a great video about RSS, Real Simple Syndication. You can watch it now or later. It explains in simple language and images how RSS works, and how you can easily get great content to come to you instead of searching the internet for it. Sure, you can show this video to students or teachers to explain RSS. But this is also a terrific example of a video students can make themselves. Student-made help videos can be a resource to teach both students and teachers about how to use the technology your school already has. As the students create more videos, you could set up a podcast or vodcast library, put them on school or district portals, or burn them to DVDs and hand them out to teachers. Things to notice about this video that make it a great example of what kids can do. It's short. The reason movie trailers are 2 to 3.5 minutes long. If someone can tell the story of Star Wars in 2.5 minutes, your students can explain a concept in the same amount of time. Challenge students to edit and edit again. It's low tech. This looks like sheets of paper taped to a whiteboard, right? How simple is this? Like learning to write nonfiction or technical writing, learning the language of visual literacy is more than just storytelling. Videos that teach concepts allow students to explore the needs of an audience and how to convey concepts to a real audience. Audio is separate from video. Sometimes the audio part of making a video is the hardest part. This type of video can be shot, edited, and completed with a voiceover. It's about your technology. A student-made help video will show exactly how your technology works at your school, not a generic example. And finally, the people who watch this video will know your students. Students may actually pay attention when other students are the teachers. And as you know, teaching is learning. If you want students to learn more about blogging, podcasting, using the active whiteboard, or other technologies, making a video help guide will help them learn more as they figure out how to explain it to someone else. And there's no reason that students couldn't make videos explaining any concept in the curriculum. If you've chosen to create a student tech team outside your class, it takes special attention to recruit, support, and grow your team. Some of the elements of a successful tech team that will last are to provide constant leadership opportunities. Students need increasing challenges and opportunities to motivate them for the long term. Find ways for them to increase their participation and responsibility as their skills grow. Trust and responsibility go hand in hand. The adult in charge of the program, whether a teacher, advisor, or member of the technical staff, must be able to communicate with and care about the students. Ask Cree Before Me means creating a culture of peer mentoring and finding answers on their own. If you are a guru, try to be Yoda-like. If you aren't a guru, admit it. With a student-led culture, you walk the talk about giving students responsibility. It may mean letting go of some aspects, but you will be rewarded by students who step up to the plate and take command. Advanced students need to be the role models and tech gurus, not you. An open and accepting culture means you need to go out of your way to make sure that all students can find their niche, even if they're not super geeks. Girls are especially sensitive to signals that they are not welcome. Artists can make contributions if they are accepted as valuable. Make sure that newcomers can easily find things to do, that supplies and computers are shared equally, and that there's enough time and room for social and collegial sharing within the group. For long-term sustainability, it's crucial to offer students graduation credit,
at this point in the presentation,
student leadership,
you may be saying,
or service
what
learning
kids
credit,
are you talking
or
about?
A path to a paid internship.
And this isn't something that happens overnight.
You need students
overnight.
To return
to
semester
step
after
at a time.
Semester.
You also want to think
finally,
about looking for these kids in new
places. Students need to understand
and follow
school rules and
policies. According
to a new study by the National School
Board Association,
but they will resent
arbitrary
changes
to these
students
policies.
Are the ones at the cutting edge of technology.
Try to set up rules and effective penalties
that
make sense
and
give students
a say
in
the administration of their own program.
Nonconformist
students
are
sure to mete out punishments
and rewards with
heavier
users
of
social networking
sites
and other
students. One of the benefits of including students
more
in this
likely
process
to be is that they become
ambassadors
of online content than other
students. Can be very effective
spokespeople for using technology in education,
traditional and
especially if they can show the impact.
Including communication,
students can do formal presentations, collaboration,
school board meetings,
and
staff meetings,
district
and
technology
days,
or even national conferences.
Yet there are significantly
more likely
even
than
more
other
valuable
skills
by sharing their accomplishments.
Or be the ones ignoring school
even
policies
informally,
for technology use.
Students can be a conduit to
these
parents.
These findings suggest
parents
that
schools
that technology
need to find
is
ways
crucial
to engage
for their sons and daughters
students
in good jobs
more creative
and
activities.
That
parents
who
see that their students are at the cutting edge of technology will be more likely to support it in the future, and less worried about pedophiles and scary media hype about MySpace and sexual predators. Last but certainly not least, students will be ambassadors to their peers. If they understand what you are trying to do with technology, they will help you explain it to others. Allow them to share their expertise, and it will take the burden off you and allow you to focus on teaching, not troubleshooting. Finding ways to shift responsibility to students builds their trust in you as a leader and builds trust in themselves as capable individuals. This might be hard in many cases. We tend to build dependency in students by telling them exactly how to do their work. They get used to this, and in fact, the more successful students are usually the most addicted to this handholding. They've learned how to win at this game of school and have the most at stake that the game continues exactly how they've learned to play it. Breaking these habits can be tough, and students have to trust you to not turn the tables back on them without warning. Encouraging an atmosphere of risk-taking in the classroom where mistakes are celebrated as a step on the path to understanding is great, but that has to be every day and not just every once in a while. Taking responsibility for their own learning is a step towards students caring about their work beyond the grade. There's a lot of talk about how technology engages students, but really, engagement is an outcome. It's not something you can purchase with a software package or do to a student. Students can be superficially engaged in cool new technology, but in the long run, engagement comes from being truly interested in the work they are being asked to do. By giving students real responsibility, they are empowered to complete work because they want to and they see the real need. Be careful that your assessment methods don't work against your own intentions. Giving points, for example, for the number of blog comments posted will usually cause students to churn out meaningless comments and reinforce the message that their blogging is for you, not for them. At this point in the presentation, you may be saying, "What kids are you talking about?" And this isn't something that happens overnight. You have to take this a step at a time. You also want to think about looking for these kids in new places. According to a new study by the National School Board Association, nonconformist students are the ones at the cutting edge of technology. You can find this study linked on the wiki site for this presentation. Nonconformist students are significantly heavier users of social networking sites than other students, are more likely to be producers and editors of online content than other students. These students seem to have an extraordinary set of traditional and 21st century skills, including communication, creativity, collaboration, and leadership, and technology proficiency. Yet they are significantly more likely than other students to have lower grades or be the ones ignoring school policies for technology use. These findings suggest that schools need to find ways to engage nonconformist students in more creative activities that lead to academic learning. So are these kids your allies or enemies? Do you know where to find them, how to motivate them, and bring them on side? These students could be the key to successful use of technology in your classroom, providing both expertise and the networking ability to create wider acceptance among their peers. By providing them with a role, graduated responsibility, and an understanding of what the goals are for educational technology, they could be your primary asset, an advanced team, and a force for change. Students working side by side with teachers represent what a learning community is supposed to be. Everyone learning, everyone teaching, sharing knowledge, and working together. I hope you consider some of these techniques as you use Web 2.0 tools in the classroom. So best of luck to you and all the Janes out there who are working hard to make school a place that is relevant to students in this digital world.